With the microphone on, I declare the meeting open. City of Marion, full of surprises. We acknowledge we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders past and present. I let everyone know that the meeting will be recorded and the audio will be available on the website. I ask elected members if they foresee any declaration of interest with an item on the agenda. None, then we can keep going. After someone to move confirmation of the minutes, moved Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Byram. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously, thank you. Communications, just after a motion that the reports be received. Moved Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Adjourned items. Do we have any? I don't think we do. Sorry, I'm just asking staff, the communication reports are listed as being on page 54, but I have a blank page 54. Please explain.
There isn't any confidential reports, it's just the way we list the agenda items, and in order for it to appear on the cover page, it has to be listed. And so it's only if there's items underneath.
But were there no reports? Only in the second meeting of the month. Okay, that's fine. So on page 55, we have a petition regarding Phyllis Court with appendices. And as is the case with petitions generally, it's our job just to note the petition tonight. And any member or administration can then bring an appropriate motion to council if further action is desirable. Do staff want to explain anything more about the petition before we go to that?
Through the chair, no, that's correct. If members have any further comments on it, the appendices detail how we responded today.
Right. So basically, just from reading it, these Warradale residents feel that two-storey buildings aren't warranted. Is it the case that I suspect that they are technically allowed within the current development plan, is that right?
Yes. Through the chair, that is correct.
The residents of Cook Crescent and Phyllis Court, Warradale, are among many thousands who feel that the current development plan has gone too far in terms of what's permissible, and we are trying to do something about that through the plan that we've put to the Minister. So, would someone like to move that the petition be noted? Moved Councillor Blescu, seconded Councillor Westwood. All those in favour? That's carried, thank you. At least we are trying to do something about it. The next item is a confidential item, but I have reason to put that forward to later on, to just leave that, so I won't call it on at the moment. Staff will tell me if I have to do anything more than that, but I just won't call it on at the moment. So we'll skip straight through to page 73, Organisational Policy Review. Now we've got here the framework and a number of the policies. So the motion is actually approving the policies as well, isn't it? Ms. McKenzie, yes. A lot of them have been reconsidered recently in any event. Part of our process of cutting down the number of policies. There were a few stray ones that I felt warranted a bit of elected member discussion, so we'll deal with them next Tuesday at the forum. Sister City and City Limits, just a handful. But anyway, I haven't picked up anything like that in this mob. So would someone like to move? Councillor Westwood, did you have a question?
I think it's too many policies to be rescinded at this stage in one lot, but if the council wants to rescind or carry on with the motion. Group that you're reconsidering at a forum.
Well, that's a reasonable sort of request. Bearing in mind that staff, I've observed that staff have been spending months, well, probably most of a year, on filtering through the numerous policies on the books. So,
can I just say briefly, if I may, if you have indulgence, that the community garden policy, said in the explanation that much of the amount matters, many of the matters were covered in another policy. Well, I read the other policy and really it wasn't. So I'm a bit concerned, and it makes me a bit concerned about all the policies, but I'll leave it to the judgment of other councillors if they think the rest of the policies are covered adequately elsewhere, but certainly community gardens wasn't adequately covered in the alternate policy that was suggested.
It's a fair comment to say that some things have been trimmed down. So, for example, we had perhaps staff could help, but there was a roadside memorial policy. Is that one that's gone? Mm-hmm. But all of the detail that was in that policy hasn't necessarily appeared in other policies. So there will be things like that where it's been trimmed down and some things have gone. But, of course, a lot of things can be managed through common sense rather than requiring a specific policy for the topic. Yeah, Ms. McKenzie?
Through the Chair, one of the objectives of what we've tried to do with the policy review is ensure that the policies are actually policies. And so a lot of the procedural work, which was in some of the policies, has been pulled out. So you will see that we are trying to lift the bar on the policies. We're trying to condense them down into about a two-page policy, which clearly articulates what the policy is trying to achieve and what its objective is. Anything that is procedural has been pulled out into procedural documents. So, for example, the memorial policy, which Mayor Hannah just raised, a lot of the procedural side of that has now been picked up within the open space policy, and then the details are followed with a procedure rather than the policy document. So you will see some differences there.
Councillor Westwood, do you still want to pull out community gardens policy?
In particular, the community garden one, yes, because it was some pages long, and there certainly isn't some pages long elsewhere. So it's very brief.
I might come back to you to move the motion. I just want to check. Councillor Crossland, concern?
I was just going to say that I'm happy to second that option.
Right.
I also had some concerns, but I had to manage to solve that making phone calls today. There was a lot of information to go through in one go.
That's true. But if you haven't been able to resolve it prior to the meeting, Councillor Westwood, would you like to move the motion as printed but add the words except for the community gardens policy?
Can I just ask what you were going to second? Just the community gardens.
If Ms. Horton could come up with appropriate wording. So do we need to change clause 2 and 3? Well, Councillor, you remember I have ESP, elected member sensory perception. I think most councillors would rather go through with this trimming down of policies tonight, but you always have the option of chancing your arm.
Well, I'm happy just to move the motion to move the motion except for the community gardens motion. Policy.
Very well. And you'll see in that list now that's on the screen that point C, community gardens, has been taken out. So I think that's all we need to do, isn't
okay.
it?
All right. Well,
therefore, you're moving in that that form, and it's seconded, Councillor Crossan. Did you wish to speak any more to the motion, Councillor Liftwood?
I think I pretty well said it, and I thank you for your indulgence.
No, happy to work that out. Councillor Crossan, anything more? Speaking against or question, Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I just have a question. Does the lack of rescission of the current community garden policy have any impact on the community garden stuff that we're chasing up with Oliphant Avenue? Is it going to prevent any work there, or is it?
Well, it means it's a standing policy, but Ms. McKenzie can answer.
Through the Chair, it will have no effect because we haven't rescinded that policy. It will still be in place, so we'll be following the guidelines of what's in that current arrangement.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, okay. So what I was trying to get to is, if we were to go ahead tonight and rescind the policy, is it easier for us to get to where we need to get to on the Oliphant Avenue Community Garden, or is that something that we would still follow through? Nah, okay, that's fine.
Yep, no need to close the debate. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by a majority, thank you. So we move forward to page 152. The community facilities policy, and I would just preface this one by saying that this is one that's been kicking around for a long time. There's been a lot of opportunity for discussion about it. Over to you. Who would like to put that up? Councillor Hutchinson has printed. Anything to say?
No, only that it's important to support the open and accessible use of our facilities, so I think we're moving in the right direction.
Councillor Westwood, seconding. Do you wish to speak to it?
Just very briefly, and that is it's a very high-level policy as far as I can see, and perhaps that's a good thing that if a lot of these policies are being pulled out and reviewed in that way, and maybe that is the way we should be going, because council should be guiding staff and the whole city from a very top level as much as possible without getting our fingers in every pie if possible. So I think that's quite interesting. Thank you.
Yes, I refer you to the pie policy for that. I'll put the motion in. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So moving to page 159. The open space policy now, somewhat interrelated with the community facilities policy, but this again has been discussed on numerous occasions and we seem to have got to a happy result. Councillor Velescu, you'd like to move?
Look, I'm happy to move as is. Obviously, this is something that obviously is a bit of a work in progress because the community does have various expectations and sometimes what people request of us we are actually doing. They're just not aware of how it's been done through the policy. So I guess some of the things that we're looking at is a bit more practical approach to our community open space. So I'm just happy to leave it there. The other thing is we may need a bit of flexibility as far as the distance, as far as the 400 to 500 metres. So that's just something to be aware of. In some places it might actually be better to have less distance. In other places we practically may need to have a little bit more. So just happy to point that out.
Is that seconded? A question, Councillor Crossan?
Thank you. Just a little concern, and it may be nothing. My interpretation of local level playgrounds was they would just have natural shade and neighbourhood level and above would have shade. The way this is worded, it sort of infers that local level may get shade as well as natural shade and neighbourhood level may have shade, not will have shade. So I just wanted staff just to clarify what that means.
Through the Chair, the local level is just natural shade, whereas the neighbourhood level is natural shade and where required, and I'm just checking with clarification with staff, where required, also shelter shade. Yep.
I just wonder if the first part of where it says types of facilities for local level, that shade there should be removed and just leave the natural shade in that list. Might make it clearer.
Yes, what Ms. Dixon is saying the policy is intended to be is not what it says, actually. In the table, I'm looking at the tables on page 163.
Yeah.
So if we took out the word shade, where it appears after park bench,
then we'd see a differential between local and neighbourhood.
Yeah. So how would staff like to record that in the recommendation? Well, it says as provided in Appendix 1. Do we just note that somehow? The mover is happy to incorporate that change, Councillor Valescu? Doesn't preclude it. It says that local should have natural shade. It means that putting it in would be against policy. That's also probably have to be a council decision rather than an administrative decision. Okay, so you're happy to incorporate that change at the moment? Thank you. I just want to make sure we're looking at the same place. It's shade from, should be shade from the description of local level open space. I know, that's the problem.
So you're talking about the one up here?
Yeah. So what if you had in that, you just said after quote park benches, then you know what you're talking about. And there's no need to repeat it, is there? Local level open space. And park bench would need to be in quotes. Yeah. Councillor Crossland, you happy with that? Yep. And so you're happy to second the motion? Anything further? Anyone against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Thank you. So over to page 169, energy efficiency and renewable energy, a plan for the City of Marion. Looks good. Councillor Blesko to move.
Yeah.
happy to move as is. Look, I made some inquiries with staff prior to the meeting. It is a very high level, and I had some questions. Are we going to maximise Marion residents' opportunity in taking advantage of the grants that the new Liberal state government are going to give as far as people that get a battery system on their home solar? And also, if we can maximise the 40 or 50,000 home battery that the incoming Liberal government has kept, which was the previous Labor government initiative, if we can maximise that, especially in some of the trust homes and those lower income homes, to help reduce the cost for those people, but also to increase the green energy production in the area. So, and I was told that all that stuff is part of the inertia, and this is the oversight. And I believe there have been some ongoing discussions with Renewal SA in regards to those opportunities. So I guess when this comes back, I would like to see more how we're going with some of those initiatives, how we're going with some of the initiatives for business, because it'd be great if we can work as a catalyst for the external opportunities and minimise the funds that we have to use to still get the same outcomes. I also asked about the business within the organisation, how we have to save money, and I have been advised that we would actually look at the impact of the ideas. So we wouldn't be changing something green for the sake of it. We'd actually look at the impact of the business to make sure that it suited our direction. You know, we didn't get a whole heap of Fiat 500s for the staff that had to carry tools, things like that. So you'd actually have quite a robust process, and obviously to make that part of our everyday business. So yeah, I'm very happy with it. I think there's been a lot of work on that, and it'd be quite a positive thing. And it's not just about making a statement, it's actually being able to have those deliverables. And what we've done over the last term, we should be really happy with what we've done with our energy efficiency and renewable energy. I think 375 kilowatt hours that we've got throughout the city, and that will have a very short payback time. And we're looking at, I think, another 35 to offset some other operations. So, yeah, it's very good policy.
Yes, I think people are pretty impressed that we discovered solar energy 3 years ago. Councillor Byrum.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I second what Councillor Velescu has said. And I do want to acknowledge the staff and the amount of work they've put into this. It is commendable. Thank you.
Anyone speaking in opposition? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Thank you. Page 180. Now, if the background to this is the Edwardstown Oval project, where we said, look, to make this work and get all the clubs together, we need to pay for a manager. It's time to lift the facility to the next level. And then I and others raised the issue of equity. We also have to look at other sports hubs in the same way. And so this is the turn of Cove Sports and Community Club to get a manager as a matter of equity, applying the same principle. Councillor Byrum.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, move the motion as written. And fully support this. It is the way ahead that we need to go with Cove Sports. So, recommend this.
Now, Councillor Gard had a question. I'll take that. I'd ask staff to comment.
Through the chair, so on the second page of the agreement, so on 185, there is a clause around the review of the subsidy, and it states the last sentence that council retains the right to reduce that amount should the club's financial position improve, and that will happen annually. That review.
Councillor Gard happy at the moment?
Through the chair, if my co-members are happy with that, I would rather see it stated up front. It is stated up front in the discussion. I would rather see it as a consistency. I'm not going to stand on principle too greatly with that.
So your point that where it says amount of funding on page 184, you would say up to. Is that what
yes,
you're getting at?
That's correct.
Couple of places.
Through the chair, we can easily incorporate that.
All right. Well, let's do that. Let's think of some appropriate wording. But first, I would ask Councillor Byram, are you happy to incorporate that? It's not changing the intent, really. So some sort of... Yeah. And then you might have to put in brackets after that CPI indexed. Which is what it says in the agreement. All right. Look, I'll look. Was there a question, Councillor Valescu?
Through the chair, so by employing a skilled facility manager, we would be seeking an increase in revenue and also achieving greater cost efficiencies as well.
The other answer to that, there are obligations on the part of the club, good governance and so on, and culture, and the agreement may be terminated if there's non-compliance. So basically, council can pull the trigger if there's non-compliance on the part of the club. So that's the other circumstance, apart from varying financial circumstances.
Because if the finances don't improve, then, you know, that may not reflect increased community use, and also vice versa, the finances may improve, but there may be some other issues that need to be addressed. But it's a great initiative to support our clubs to do it, especially with their facilities. So, yeah.
It's a great opportunity for all of our sports hubs to go to another level of professionalism. Councillor Westwood.
I'd like to second the motion. Thanks.
Yes, go ahead.
Speak. So it's very refreshing that the club may get off to an even better start than it's had. Been going for a while, of course. But I think with the acquisition of this new position, it'll be good for the club to have the support of someone who's capable and is there specifically to assist the club to run neatly and tidily. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it goes.
Fantastic. Any more questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Thank you. So we're off to page 187. Variation of easement at Young Street. Perhaps I'll ask staff to give a brief explanation. Ms Dixon.
Through the chair, so this is an administrative report. There was a resolution passed back in 2011 where DIPTI were requesting an amendment to an existing easement. We've since had advice that they no longer want to pursue that, so it's just noting that resolution will not be enacted.
That's right. I was wondering why I couldn't remember the 2011 resolutions because I wasn't here. Councillor Byram to move. Seconded Councillor Westwood. Any further discussion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. On to page 195, Oaklands Railway Crossing. Now, I certainly do have something to say about this, because you members will note that the bulk of the report is about the staff response to the next stage of development with the Oaklands station vicinity, but there is scope there for elected members to add their own comments, and I feel very strongly that we need to make a point about the car parking. I was shocked when the PTP consultants came to a council forum a few weeks ago and advised that the good news of 50 or so extra car parking spaces was completely counteracted by the fact that they were to be sited on a space destined for buildings. So when the buildings are built, you don't get the extra parking. That's the way I figure it out anyway. So I've consulted with our planning department manager, Mr. Katinar, and I have some suggested wording that probably doesn't go far enough, but perhaps I could ask for that to be put up on the screen so everyone can see it. It's only sort of just come back to me at the last minute. But meanwhile, yeah, so you see that's a very, very succinct version, and probably some reference to that explanation I made should be in there as well. You can just paraphrase what I said. Mr. Katinar, what's your view of this, with the sort of planning to put car parks where the land is destined for built form?
Through the chair, it's a tricky one in that when development is proposed on the future development site, the relevant authority would need to take into account the fact that that development would occupy an area that's currently dedicated to car parking, notwithstanding that the development being proposed would also need to provide its own car parking as would be required on the ratio. I guess the question will be, at the point that that application is made, if it's made, who the relevant authority will be in that instance. Now, it may well be the City of Marion. It may be a matter that's called in by the Coordinator General. We don't know as yet. So I guess if it were Council assessing it, we would have more confidence that we would review that matter.
But, I mean, it's certainly not something we ask any other developer to do, is it? If Westfield or Castle Plaza or someone wants to extend their shopping centre, we don't say to them, can you do an extra 50 car parks for the general public who aren't even going to shop with you? We don't do that anywhere else, do we?
No.
So that's what I'm interested to hear members' views on that, but I'm suggesting that at least some additional comments be provided. Do we need to suspend standing orders to sort of get that right? It's one of those things where there are multiple answers to the question. So moved, Councillor Pryor, seconded Councillor Valescu. All those in favour? So that's carried unanimously. So standing orders are suspended. Just to have a discussion about that. I think we should go around the table. If anyone has any views about additional comments or explanation that can or should be added to that, start with Councillor Pryor, if you like, because I know that he lives and breathes the Oaklands Crossing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I agree. I was quite surprised to learn that the 50 car parks extra that we were getting for this major hub were not going to be there in X years' time. So I have some real concerns about that, particularly given the fact that the station is going to be fantastic and there's not going to be anywhere for people to park. The other concern that my co-counsel and I have discussed is about the remaining significant trees on the block or on the area, in that a lot of those are adjacent to areas which are going to be developed in the future. Now, as it stands at the moment, we as the council have some sort of negotiating power to make sure those trees remain. But if those blocks are developed one block at a time, then that really waters down our power to make sure that those trees remain at the crossing. So,
what's your view? Would it be possible to ask for an easement to apply to the stand of trees adjacent to Crozier Terrace, is it, or Murray? Murray Terrace, rather.
Through the chair, I think that's one potential way to do it, but I would suggest we do it with outside of the development assessment process and negotiating with the state government to create an easement. That might be one way of providing some sort of land buffer to ensure trees aren't affected.
Planning condition?
I don't believe application of a planning condition would be necessary insofar as any future development proposed on that site or any future development that might be undertaken on that site would need to demonstrate before first getting an approval that it wasn't going to cause damage to the trees. So at the point of a new application being proposed and assessed, that question about impact to the health of those trees would need to be reviewed and a decision made, and it could be in 10 years' time that the appropriate decision might be that the tree be removed or that the tree still has good health and vigour and should be retained. So that the application of a condition now probably wouldn't have too much work to do other than potentially if council wants to make a statement about preserving the trees.
Just for the record, I'd be happy with the statement.
Should it be just put in general terms that council strongly of the view that the current line of, or you might want to describe them, Councillor Private, the line of trees adjacent to Murray Terrace or on the northern side of the current railway?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's really the remaining significant trees around the crossing. Most of the other ones have unfortunately been taken out. And I think a statement about the council's intent to retain those trees would at least inform any developer who was looking at that site that they're going to have to develop around these trees if that's the case. And I think that would be the broader view of the community as well, from what I can gather.
Okay. Can I suggest some words for Ms. Horton to type in there? Perhaps if we, after State Commission Assessment Panel, if we put it in there, following comments, council seeks to safeguard the Mr. Gatner, you have a go.
Council seeks I'll start again. I would word it to say that the existing regulated trees identified to be retained should be maintained in good health and vigour to the reasonable satisfaction of council.
Does that only cover us for the period of development of the Oaklands Crossing, though?
Through His Worship, it has an ongoing element to it, so she'll be retained. So to be retained should be maintained in good health and vigour to the reasonable satisfaction of council. So there's a maintenance provision in there, maintained in good health and rigour, ongoing, and to our reasonable satisfaction. Because ultimately, once the development's complete, if there's anything not in accordance with the approved plans, we'll be the responsible authority to undertake any enforcement.
Okay, and another question, does that clause give us a leg to stand on in 5 years' time when someone comes to us and says, look, there's only one significant tree, why can't I knock it down to build my three-storey villa?
Through the Mayor, you often get an application that's contrary to a previous condition that may apply to the land, and it's at the point of assessment of that new application that you, I guess, reopen that question and test whether or not it is appropriate to retain the tree. As I mentioned earlier, in 10 years' time, it might be quite appropriate that one of those trees be removed, so we'll, you review that at the time.
Yeah, and that's possibly as good as we're going to do in the current format anyway, so I'm relatively happy with that.
Through his worship, just to add another word in there, so should read, the existing regulated trees which are identified to be retained should be retained and maintained. Or shall be retained and maintained.
Long term.
Dealings with the state government, we know we've not got a leg to stand on. Is there any way in which we can have that strip of trees and the land designated to council, so we actually call it a road verge? So if a tree does die, we can replace it. So it pretty much ensures that those trees will be there forever. But that's the only way, because if it's not our ground, if we don't have any jurisdiction over it, we're really their words.
Through his worship, again, separate to the development application process, there's no reason why council can't engage further with DIPT to see if there can be some transfer of the land over to council ownership. In terms of maintenance, if a condition of the consent is that the trees be maintained and retained to the reasonable satisfaction of council in terms of the health and vigour, whether it's government land or private land, if it's a condition of their development approval, it's incumbent upon them to ensure that they're completing and carrying out works on the site that satisfy that condition.
Have to be constantly adhered to. If their tree's growing on state government land and they go to the DAC, that'd be pretty much... They'll ask for a tokenism question, oh, what do you think? But we know what the outcome will be. So I just wondered, is now the are we in a position of strength now to say we want that strip of land with the trees in?
Through his worship, I couldn't speak to whether or not we're in a position of strength now or not. It's not something that would be negotiated through the development application process. But I guess any time is potentially the right time to start that conversation.
I think we need to show we have to do something now. And whether it's an easement or whether we have the land, we have to stop development there, because what will happen is what happens in the rest of the city where there's a regulated or significant tree. Something gets built, it either dies a mysteriously quick death or dies over time, or it becomes a danger all of a sudden to the building that's popped up 3 minutes ago. So we actually need to indicate now that we want those trees protected for the long term, either through an easement or through the land given to us, and then that strengthens our resolve when we speak to DIPT, because they may say this isn't the process to do it, but they know we're serious about pursuing it in other processes. My concern is if we leave it, it's basically kicking the can down the road, and then we'll get the piecemeal development and those trees will go. And I think the community has said they're not happy that the trees have gone.
Yeah.
So let's do what we can to
save. I'm just thinking of how to strengthen that. What if we added another sentence after that? Development should not be permitted, which would impair the health of these trees.
I would say...
And I'm bearing in mind that it's a response to a planning application, so there is a limit to how far we can go in what is essentially a letter to the planning authority.
Could we put something like, it should not be permitted, and considering a possible easement, or what Councillor Crossland suggested as part of that, or would that be a...
Lockwood sent next,
I think what it might be is a separate clause to the motion on the item that we write to the Minister for Transport seeking ownership, seeking council ownership of a road verge, including the regulated trees adjacent to Murray Terrace.
Or a building easement? Or?
To own it would be the best. So it writes to the Minister for Transport seeking council ownership of a verge adjacent to Murray Terrace, which would include the regulated trees. Are there any, Mr. Kettner, any trees going from that point that have already been approved for demolition? I thought they were all further south. All right. So, Ms. Horton, maybe if we move where it says ownership of a verge, including regulated trees adjacent to Murray Terrace, just as slightly putting it around the other way. And then after Terrace, you can delete the rest. So I think that goes some way to meet those concerns. Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, just as a bit more information, I seem to recall that the Alliance has divided those blocks up from behind the trees, so there is a strip of land that's there now. I think the last point that we've just added does make our intentions very clear about that strip of land, which I like. But the Alliance does have a block which starts behind those strip of trees, from what I can gather. So
between the current railway and the trees,
between the new railway and the trees is. Yeah, that's where they've optimised block sizes in there for the development they're seeking. So I think this would be a good inclusion, this passage.
Councillor Gard.
Yes, I'm in alignment with both the parking and the trees situation, just for the records. The one thing that I'd want more reassurance on is that we are establishing provision, or at least we're overseeing that DIPTI does, as far as the future connectivity of that particular area with the Westfield Triangle, if you want to call it that. It's something that they did discuss with us probably in the second round of presentations. But I just don't see anything tangible there that that actually holds them to making those provisions in their designing up.
The question is whether it's a matter for this planning application. But Mr. Kattner, what's your view?
Just wish I'd probably say it's probably outside the scope of where we'd provide comments on this application.
But yeah, we want to do it, and they want to do it. But it's probably just a one step out. Councillor Crossland. Mr. Kattner, what can we do about that?
Through His Worship, there are a lot of components to this crossing development that don't constitute development. So this application that we're providing comments back to SCAT is only really dealing with those components that require development approval. They're the little bits of detail that the city activation team are working through with PPP.
Councillor Westwood.
Just briefly, yes, I think the extra car or car park should be emphasised considerably because I did have cause to use the trains myself recently, and I must say it's during the day it's catastrophic, the parking situation at all stations, and I think that it's certainly not just this government, it's certainly previous governments as well, have to make an effort to provide adequate parking at stations if they want the train system to be used, unless, of course, we suddenly get self-drive electric vehicles coming in the next few years.
Well, I'll leave you to keep working on that one. I know you're very passionate about it, Councillor Westwood. Just in relation to Councillor Crossland, on page 212, you have got that extract from the application which talks about crime prevention, including high levels of lighting on platforms, walkways, car parks. So it's true, it doesn't mention CCTV, but there is at least an intent to deal with the issue. Can I then just look at what we had about parking, because it needs a bit more of a preamble. Perhaps the trees line there. Oh, we're going to add something to that too. Let's make that a number one, just so it's a bit easier to navigate. Can we make that a... where it says the existing regulated trees, can that be a point one? And at the end of that sentence, just adding another sentence, that development should not be permitted which would impair the health of these trees. Thank you. And then a paragraph two will be about the parking. But so there'll be another little beginning bit there. Parking for the current Oaklands Railway Station has been inadequate in the Monday to Friday period. There are how many? Dozens, hundreds of cars parked in residential streets. There are hundreds of period. There are hundreds of commuter cars parked in nearby residential streets. Parked in nearby residential streets. Full stop. This causes loss of amenity for nearby residents. Full stop. The applicant states that there will be approximately 50 additional car parks. Full stop. Council is concerned this is illusory because the car parks designated for the northern side of the railway line are on land, it's not very technical, but are on land which the applicant expects to be developed with built form. Now, Mr. Kettner, can you polish that if need be?
I think that's, I think that reads as it should.
And then where it's got 50 question mark, shall we just make that 50 or so to make it a bit more elegant. Yeah, sure. Well, sure. All right, other comments, or have we, is that enough, Councillor Blescu?
There were a few things that the community wanted. They wanted to keep the guy working there. They wanted to have toilets available. The guy got moved away from everyone, and then he got shuffled off, and their office got closed, and the toilets got closed. So could we do anything in this process so we don't get the same sort of disappointment? The very things that the community wants are the first things that go. And I remember that the toilets didn't open until yourself, Your Worship, when you were the member at the time, ended up on TV complaining about it, and all of a sudden they opened. And these were the things the community wanted, the very last things, and then they went. So I'm just wondering, is that something that we would do here, based on the previous experience?
The trouble being, is that service provision or planning application material, Mr. Katnar?
Through His Worship, just so I understand what the concern is. So am I right in hearing that you have a concern that some of the infrastructure like toilets, etc., are going to be the last pieces of infrastructure delivered?
Kiosk that was set up that was subsequently closed, and there were toilets which people can't use. They're still there today. So we need to know that they build the facilities, but they actually, people can use them. And all this thing about amenity, it actually ends up benefiting the community, not getting locked up. Now, there's no kiosk there at the moment, I understand, but if they're going to have toilets there.
So this is getting to the structure of the actual railway station itself and the facilities that it offers to commuters. And Councillor Valescu is making the point that there are those sort of services that people want. Can it be addressed through the planning application?
Through His Worship, I guess you could request that a condition be applied that the toilets remain in operation and are maintained to a certain standard. It's an interesting one because it's public infrastructure that's maintained by state governments. One would expect that they perform their duty to the public and ensure that they're maintained in operation. I guess it's whether or not typically when I look at things, I look at it from if we were to enforce or bring about some kind of compliance, what would be the more effective tool? Now, the question here might be, would the more effective tool be the Development Act, or would it be lobbying the Minister saying, hey, the facilities at this station are run down, you need to do something about it because the community is demanding that something be done. So I don't have any aversion to having any such wording included here, but it might be something for the elected members to consider about if it does eventuate that there's an issue, what might be the preference in terms of bringing about a result for the community.
That we speak to the appropriate person and would like the facility to remain open, unlike the previous...
Yeah. Look, Councillor, I think it really is a service issue.
Okay, sure.
What you have there is the... I mean, this is the planning application for the station itself. It includes a public toilet, so that's the starting point. However, one can say, yes, Minister, thank you. It's just that the toilet never opens. however, it's really up to the community council, if necessary, to lobby for that service to continue to be provided. But... I think it's outside of the planning application. Councillor Crossland?
Your Worship, if it was worded another way, I think under the planning process, though, we could ask that the condition be that that station is given approval subject to permanent public toilet facilities, and then it's locked in. So later down the track, they can't close the toilets. I think that's what Councillor Valescu is getting at. So it could be a condition that that station must always have public toilets. You could even lock in, you know, the amount of time they're open. But I've seen that type of thing in other applications through council.
Through His Worship, again, I guess it's the appetite of council which they would prefer to approach it, but I think the more effective tool, because it's an operation, it's a maintenance thing that whoever is providing that infrastructure, it's in their interest, you would expect, to ensure that it has the amenities provided for the general public. I see far more merit in the approach of, if there is an issue, the council as an elected body lobbying the state government together with the community to ensure that those facilities are maintained or upgraded or kept open at certain hours.
Yeah, I don't see how this is any different to us making people build garages who, and then not being able to, through the Development Act, enforce parking cars in their garage. So I think I saw Mr. Katner on this one, that it is a case of lobbying to get these facilities open.
All right. Now, I just want to take us back to that paragraph 2 in our letter about parking. That sentence, the applicant states that there will be approximately 50 car parks. Something's gone missing there, so can we just restate that? It's now at the bottom of that page, the top page. The applicant states... Yeah, yep, got that. The applicant states that the development will bring approximately an extra. And then delete, there will be... yeah, that's it. Yeah, that was the point. Sorry, Mr. Katner, go ahead.
Sorry, through your worship, I may be jumping ahead slightly, but just in the pre-prepared text, if you scroll down a little bit, so it's below the current paragraph, just the third line down, reading after future development, shall be maintained at all times, or in the event that the area development, that should read, in the event that the area is developed with built form.
Going to provide those extra 50, because that sort of leaves it open for the developer of the building to provide the extra 50, doesn't it? I mean, I guess in a sense we don't care, but nice to get it right to begin with.
Through His Worship, at the moment the land is owned by the state government, so as the land owner they will need to, I guess, advance an agreement with the future developer. And so at the point of that conversation, they will need to, negotiate who will actually be providing that car parking number.
Okay. Look, I think we've threshed it around quite a bit, probably ready for a motion now. Councillor Pryor to move.
Yeah, absolutely. The move is written. Thanks.
Anything further? Councillor Gard to second. Anything further? Then we've had a good discussion. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried by majority. Yes, I didn't actually declare it, but obviously I was acting on the basis that formal standing orders were resumed when I called on Councillor Pryor.
Your Worship.
Councillor Hutchinson, you moving for an extension of time?
No, we're a bit early for that. I just wanted to declare a perceived conflict of interest on the next item.
Right, so let me just check that we're talking about the same one. On page 224?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so although the nature of the request relates to specifically providing money to Adelaide City Council, the essence of it is that the court case, my employer was a party to it, so I'm going to declare a perceived conflict of interest and leave the room.
Sure. It's up to you. It's pretty remote, but up to you. That's fine. Look, just before we get into this, I've got some important preamble, and that is I asked a few questions of Mr. Skull when this first came up, and I said, did they come to us at the beginning of the process saying it was a... an issue of general importance that council should chip in? No, they didn't. Did they show us the lawyer's bill? No, I don't believe they have. And thirdly, are there plenty of other examples, or are there other examples of this where councils pitch in and pay each other's legal costs, and it's almost unheard of? There was the Kaurna Native Title Agreement process, ultimately unsuccessful, which we chipped in money in over many years, but that was pretty well a unique situation. Mr. Skull told me today there was some case back in 2004 where we paid someone else's legal costs, but it's extremely rare. So, Mr. Skull, do you want to add to that?
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Horton did a lot of work to try and find out whether there was there any case like this previously. It's correct, in 2004 the City of Mitcham had some court action for which the LGA was asked to contribute, and we actually contributed $6,800 towards their legal bills in their battle against ETSA at the time. But there's been no other. There are plenty of occasions when councils work across borders and support each other, especially recently with Holdfast Bay, but the legal support to us from local government hasn't happened that we can find, and it's quite rare for this to be invoked.
Now, Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. I'd like to move the second option, that we decline the LGA's request. I think it's pretty obvious that the matter's been done and dusted since December 2017. If it was an ongoing matter and one that we were threatened with legally, then I think, you know, maybe we would be open to joining, but since it's finished and they didn't approach us at the time, I think it would be foolish to hand over $1,500.
Is that seconded, Councillor Valescu?
The thing to reiterate is that we're happy to work with other councils, but, you know, at the beginning of the process, speak to us, anyone else that might have an interest or be affected. But yeah, it isn't the right time for us to pitch in ratepayers' money for them.
And just on that point, I mean, it's something, Councillor Valescu, I can say that Mr. Skull and I have had frequent discussions about cooperating with other councils, something I'm trying to encourage. This council is very open to, especially neighbouring councils, other large councils in procurement, a whole range of things. But there is a way of going about it to get the best results. Now, questions or speaking against, Councillor Crossland?
A question, please, Your Worship. Again, I just wondered why, in this type of circumstance where it affects all councils, why the LGA wouldn't be the people stepping in and fighting the case on behalf of all councils. Do they have such a fund, or do they take any interest in such things?
Mr. Scott.
Through Your Worship, I'd have to take that on notice. I don't think they do have a legal fund to fight cross-council issues, and I'm pretty sure that they would come to councils to contribute to the legal bill that was forthcoming if that was the case. But I can take it on notice to find out.
Ms. McKenzie, anything else?
Through the Chair, I'm not aware of anything. My understanding is that they just have this policy that enacts through the sector, seeking legal support from the other councils. I would say that the suggestion is that they probably don't have the resources to fight something on behalf of the sector necessarily.
Councillor Gard.
Now, Your Worship, yeah, I wondered if we could, if we were to go the option two, and that is a no, we just qualify that with the fact that it is an after-the-fact request. But we should also note to them that the LGA is in the process of promoting a rationalisation, if you like, of legal consultancy, so that there's a great deal of savings across the board, supposedly. I think the figure was we're up to something like $10 million a year, and this is another point in the agenda tonight, that this would reduce that $10 million down to some $2 million if we were to use the same legal services. But to just infer that there are propositions to improve the efficiency of use of legal services, but to find out after the fact is something that is difficult to support.
Well, if the motion is passed, Council can trust the Mayor to incorporate the reasons that have been discussed this evening. We don't necessarily need to spell them all out, but I'll put that in the letter and that'll be made available to members. Councillor Westwood.
I was just wondering, is this contribution, for instance, if we did make it, I know the motion's against it, but if we did make it, is there some kind of support that we're showing for some big picture thing? I'd like to ask the staff or anyone else to comment on that, please. I can't see it.
Mr. Scull?
Through your worship, I'm not sure how to answer the question, but I think it would show that we're supporting fellow councils in the sector with their legal bills with an issue that could have actually come back and affected us all. And we are a member of the local government sector, so I don't know how that's going to be viewed if we don't, but I do know that other councils have said no to this offer, to this request as well. Yep.
Some are in, some are out. Very well. If there's no further debate, did the mover wish to add anything? I'll put the motion. All those in favour to decline, all those against, carried by majority. Thank you. You might want to ask Councillor Hutchinson to come back into the room. Thanks. We're on page 235. This is simply noting Councillor Byrom's report. I suppose there's no reason why, Councillor Byrom, you couldn't move it. Did you wish to elaborate?
I'm assuming everyone's read it, and it was a very educational visit to Canberra and a very busy time, starting with breakfast and going through to the evening. So came back exhausted, but very, very good.
Yes. I know that you had a delightful lunch at Parliament House with Nicole Flint MP, our member for Boothby, and when Ms McKenzie emailed me and said, would you like us to raise anything at lunch with Ms Flint, I simply replied, just the champagne glasses. But that was a joke. I shouldn't have perhaps been so flippant, when in fact I'm sure it was a very meaningful discussion about some common issues that we have. Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. Now, page 238, questions taken on notice register. Does anyone wish to raise any of those items? If not, we'll just dispatch the business. Someone to move that we note the register. Councillor Crossland, seconded. Councillor Hutchinson, all those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. Councillor Blescu's motion in relation to hall hire fees, asking for a report at this stage.
Thank you, Your Worship. Based on community feedback that I've received, yourself and other members in the chamber about asking about whether there are options for accessing these facilities if the organisations don't have the level of funding to be able to pay for the current costs. So I was just wondering if we could have a report. So this report can actually look at a balance, because I know that, for example, if people want to hire, and I did have a local resident asked me about accessing a theatre facility for something that his partner's involved in, and they're a small group, and I understand that some of the facilities do have targets, revenue targets, so it might mean that if we do want to increase accessibility for some of these smaller groups and have certain criteria, that those targets may need to be revised. We have these community facilities, they are there for the community, there has to be a balance between them paying for themselves but also having that service provision. So I would like to see a whole lot of options canvassed and brought to us. My only concern about the timing is that if it does include a significant adjustment to the budget, if it's ongoing, then I don't know if it's something that will be too late by September. So my only request is that if staff do see that it could be possible that it falls outside that caretaker cap, so to speak, that it is brought back with enough time for us to make a decision and digest the information.
Fair enough. Well said. Councillor Crossland?
I'm happy to second that. The just as a, it doesn't need the motion changing, but we do want to increase accessibility and usage in our halls and facilities. But can I also ask the report writer to look at cross charges between council departments, because it gives us not a fully representative view when a lot of the charges that have been paid to one of the facilities is an internal transfer from another council department. So we really do want to look at community use, not council paying council to use their own facility, because it really distorts the actual usage.
Yes, I think that what we're talking about here is the non-profit community groups, and I think just about all of our community centres have a specific category for that as opposed to commercial. But that's where it's getting up to $30 an hour for most of our halls now. And for the residents group that has zero income, maybe a raffle at the Christmas barbecue if they're lucky, to have to fork out even $30 a month, that money comes from nowhere in a sense, or it has to come from somewhere, and they end up meeting in a person's home. Now, we're not doing our job of providing services if that's the outcome. So, and just to put it in perspective, in terms of getting more than $70 million of rates a year from everybody, the council hall hire fee to non-profit groups would be in the thousands. It's minuscule in terms of our budget. So if we charged $10 an hour instead of $30 an hour, I don't think we're going to go under. But anyway, is anyone speaking against the motion? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, next to Councillor Valescu again. And it's a real sleeper issue, this one, a very important issue. Councillor Valescu, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I have forwarded some notes to Ms. Thwaites that I would like to add in the appendix, if I can have permission for that, Your Worship. Just some, it's basically correspondence from the resident. I should have sent it before, my apologies. It's basically some correspondence from the resident with some information taken out so I don't identify them. Just highlighting their frustrations from last November up until the end of March. So I don't know if I'm able to have that tabled or...
So just as by way of procedure, obviously we can't add it to the agenda.
Sure.
But we can add it to the minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
So we could mark it as Appendix 2, could we? I'm asking governance. And while they're thinking about that, I've got another one, because as a result of the State Minister's complete denial of responsibility, I've written to the Federal Minister, which was one of the State Minister's suggestions, to see if help can be obtained at a federal level. So that letter could also perhaps go as another appendix,
Appendix 3. And I believe that the LGA CEO has also provided some correspondence that they... on the matter, and they were a lot more sympathetic in their response to the issue. Mr. Skull sent that around, so I'm happy for that to go on as well.
So I've already signed, I'm just clarifying this motion.
Is
I've already
redundant?
Written to the Federal Minister.
What about the shadow? So they're aware of it, at least?
Right, well, that's fair enough. So that will... I don't know, maybe we should, because I don't know, can governance confirm that? But I'm pretty sure that I've signed that letter just in the last few days to go off to the Federal Minister. All right, well, we better leave the motion as it is, but we could put, we just need to change the motion slightly. Point two. Attached to the minutes. Well, do you want to dictate it? Ms. Thwaites can help us out with the wording there. seconded? Councillor Hutchinson is seconding. You went just waving your hand around. Fair enough. Don't go to an option. Councillor Westwood, thanks very much. Any further discussion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. Thank you. Councillor Gard, your motion. Page 246.
Thank you, Worship. This is a motion about standing back and discussing and looking at policy, a policy that I doubt that any of us could really quote and or even encapsulate as we currently stand. There's been a chart, courtesy of our finance department, placed on each of our desks to just summarise the ratios, and in particular I'm speaking of the net financial liabilities ratios that imply the proportion of borrowing versus the proportion of reserves against our revenue flows. And you'll see that in green the City of Marion is a negative. There's not many other negatives, and I should also mention that the average for the last 20 years for urban councils has been a ratio but always between 30 to 40% range. Now, I'd like to read a quotation from the Australian Centre of Excellence for Local Government, which was a body sponsored by a previous Australian government, and it was all about the innovation and to showcase the innovation and best practice of local government in Australia. That quotation reads, "Local government service provision is asset intensive, and local government infrastructure assets have on average long but not infinite useful lives. In such circumstances, and unless a large share of the cost of the initial provision of infrastructure assets was financed by others, for example through grants from other governments and developer contributions, it is impossible over time for a council to finance the acquisition of new assets while at the same time financing warranted asset renewal without significant reliance on debt unless, and this is the big unless service recipients are charged excessively relative to the cost of services they enjoy. Underuse of debt will therefore result in intergenerational inequity in service provision and charging decisions and or an ability to accommodate needs and preferences for new capital works and asset renewal. This is the accelerator for our strategic planning. And at the moment, we are lagging behind other councils and have done for some time. But this is not cheap money that we're deploying, because we're moving towards a doubling of rates in the last 15 years. And it's not surprising, therefore, that we have rising reserves to the extent that we have. That money is cheap when deployed from an interest point of view, but it's not cheap to the ratepayer, because the ratepayer has to incur more debt or subtract from his assets, which are earning at a reasonable rate normally, in order to foot the bill for more rates, which gives us those reserves. So it is a very important point that we address. I'm not making any suggestions as to what we should do, but what I want to know is what our policy is. So if I could leave that for members to debate, all I'm looking for is information and discussion in this motion.
Is that seconded, Councillor? Is that seconded, Councillor Hutchinson?
Thank you, Worship. I certainly agree with the spirit of Councillor Gard's motion, although I am reluctant to support the report and research on it, but I guess that is part of the necessary process. Councillor Gard raises some very good points around the fact that the intergenerational inequities that are occurring, that's a bit of a mouthful, have been there for more than 10 years. It's probably more like 15 plus. with all the assets that council's produced over that period. And I've obviously been pretty vocal on that over the last few months. So happy to support it. I think it's worth a worthy discussion. Whether we get to the point that we have a resolution before the election, I doubt it. But it is an important topic.
Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. On to page 249, proposed bylaw for cat curfew. The Mayor, so strangely enough, would you like to move it, Councillor? Councillor, Deputy Mayor Byram, you go for it.
Thank you. And I do want to make one more addition to the motion, but I'd like to explain some things first. So one of the things we understand is that the core elements to good animal management was the identification, reproduction and containment. We've seen this with dogs over the years. It's taken about 30 years of education to get there with dogs, but we have seen over the past 10 years a 50% reduction in stray dogs being impounded. And that figure is expected to increase. Decrease further. Say it the right way around. Okay, so basically with cats and doing a curfew, this is going to be a big matter. Is there only two? Oh, no. Sorry, the first one's gone as just part of one and then A and B. Sorry. And so to introduce a curfew, and then on what that is going to take in enforcement and what the cost of that is going to be quite involved and very emotive for our residents. So as well as receiving a report, I would like to put in there that the motion reads receives a report and holds a workshop for the elected members with experts being able to come in so we can discuss and further explore that. People like from the RSPCA
Can be done administratively. I mean, really all you have to do is ask. We can arrange that.
Okay. So if that's okay. But I think that this is a huge matter that we need to do fully for residents, and it's going to take a lot of education and processing for getting this organised. It's not an easy, quick fix. It is going to take a lot of time and it is going to take money and measurements to do this. So I really do support that we get a report. I know that the feral cats down southern areas of Marion are increasing, and it is a bit unknown as to exactly how many we do have of feral cats or semi-feral. A lot of owners are really responsive in keeping their cats in at night. Others let theirs roam, and then there are strays and total feral cats. The measurement of that could be the same number as domestic cats, or it could be three times the number of domestic cats, and we really don't get a handle of where we're at with that in Marion. So I'm hoping that some of this may go that way to get us started in regards to this cat management.
Thank you. I'm just going to go on a slight tangent with the idea of a forum to deal with the issue, because I think and Ms. McKenzie or staff can note this down, probably want about an hour. And Councillor Byram, if you've got particular ideas about expert contributions, you could let Ms. McKenzie know that. But one question that I've been discussing with staff is whether we want to continue with staff and elected member forums in the caretaker period, so from sort of late September to late November, pretty well. On the one hand, there are always things happening. On the other hand, it could be said, well, why do we need to be briefed on a whole range of issues when we may or may not be here after November?
So could I just have a bit of an indication, nods of heads or people that do want these things or not? Depends. Well, like the cat one, for example, is maybe one that comes into that category. But, I mean, we wouldn't put them on just for, you know, a review of how many paintings are in the compactus or whatever. But if there's a significant public issue, of course, members would want to be informed. I understand that. Okay, we'll just leave it at that. So it's been moved, Councillor Gard, to second.
In further discussions, if we do have those, is it possible to get some specialist advice, either second-hand in that management may seek it first, or direct in the process of having a forum on the subject? Because there's certainly, if you look at the Messenger Press this week, there's a representation from someone involved in the cat sector that
it's more a sorority than a fraternity, but yes, go on.
Granted, but it's something that may help to add quality to our thinking.
Yes, well, no, we can put together a good forum, no doubt about that. We could even put together a public workshop and watch the fur fly. But we'll come to that. Let's get the report first. Anyone speaking against? Councillor Gard was seconding, to be fair. Yep. So, no one? Councillor Pryor speaking against?
Yeah, I was speaking against this one. I have a few fundamental problems with this. The first being that we've tried to get people to go and enforce parking restrictions out of council hours, and we've struggled with that. And so having a cat curfew may seem like a good idea, but the cat curfew has to be about 4:30, so our inspectors have got time to get around before close of business, which I think probably won't work for us. The other thing is herding up all the stray cats is going to be a significant job. I don't know if anyone's tried cat herding, but it's not easy. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all for us trapping cats in our nature reserves. And if cats shouldn't be there, three-strike policy and you're out, I think is a good policy. Any cat that's not microchipped and we catch in our natural reserves probably doesn't get the three strikes, probably just gets the one strike. So I think there's a lot that we can do without going to a bylaw, and I'd prefer that we saw some of those options before we got to the bylaw stage.
Speaking in favour, Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, I'll speak in favour. Look, the actual enforcement might be not great, but enforcement during the day is not great. But at least with cats, we can just put out the cat traps, and basically if they put out late at night and they've got a cat in during the morning when they go back, pretty much they breach their curfew. So it will get rid of the feral cats, and we can find the owners that don't keep their cats under control. So it would be fairly easy to enforce.
Anyone else speaking against the motion? Then I'll... Councillor Valescu? Against? Can I give you 30 seconds as a matter of discretion?
Look, I think any changes do need to be phased in. I think it's good that we do have a report to look at the options and what's involved. I think that's a prudent way to go. We need to research the impact, possible impact on where the cats will end up, so the RSPCA. Also get an idea if there is any impact on the ecoculture, as indicated in the letter and the messenger and the email that we've got. We want to look at any reduction in the control costs that may be involved for residents. So that may mean that, you know, if there's an opportunity for cheaper cat pens or the netting that you use around the house, so that people that do want to do the right thing have assistance in doing so. And I think it's very important that we explain the proposals, pros and cons, to the community clearly before anything happens, and after that make a decision where we want to go.
And finally, I'll just add that if the motion is passed and a report's prepared, staff could look at the experience of some country councils in South Australia that have cat restrictions, also suburban Canberra, where there are a number of suburbs adjoining bushland which have cat, what they call cat containment policies, whereby cats have to be on the premises 24 hours a day, not just a night curfew. So there are plenty of examples to look at. We don't have to just reinvent the wheel. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Now, we have finished most of the items on the agenda, all but one. How we have finished in half the normal council meeting time, I can't think of a reason why that would be. Well, clearly, we've just proved it's not... Now, with some regret, I have to inform the gallery that the remaining item we have is a confidential item. So apart from if the confidentiality motion is moved, people will have to depart. Would anyone like to move accordingly? Councillor Crossland, seconded Councillor Westwood. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. So apart from the named people... others will have to depart.